Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and we're going to climb back into the heavens, and we're going to find out more about our journeys in and out of our bodies, in and out of our lifetimes. And this is something that has become quite well known to many people who have had hypnotic regressions. There are so many, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people at this point who have been hypnotized, not only back into their childhood, nor back into another lifetime, but actually back in between lifetimes, and have died in a previous life, and then describe the journey that they take between that life and this life, for instance. Therefore, they've had stories of what goes on out there, and these hundreds of thousands of people have very, very similar stories. It's really known now what goes on out there from these points of view in hypnotic trance. And I always say to people, if you don't believe it, have your own regression, get your own in-between lifetime experience, and you'll have the same experiences, so you'll know better yourself, rather than think that we're just promoting some religion, some dogma, and you should try to believe it because we want to control you through religion rather than through actual knowledge. So what we're talking about is knowledge of what goes on. In order to help us do that better, I've asked our astral travelers to come back again and talk with us about their experiences out there and what they know is going on from their own viewpoints of experience, and have so much to tell us. Plus, they have their own teachers who have explained a lot to them, and those are spiritual teachers from out there who they travel with and communicate with. So I want to welcome back Stephanie S. Darrow, who is the author of Seven Glorious Days in Heaven, and a future book she's working on. Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you so much.
Glad you could be here. And Darren Knight, with a K-N-I-G-H-T.
Yes, thank you very much, Peter. Good to be on the show again.
I'm so glad you're back. We're going to talk about who's out there, not only to greet us. We've done shows on the arrivals and departure plane, where we arrive out there and important people from our past are there to greet us and help us feel comfortable and warm and to allow us to make the transition from our previous life. And yet there's much more that goes on out there. And the two of you know a lot about the hierarchy out there. There actually are masters, teachers, there's panels out there, there's schools out there. There's a whole world that we live in out there. It's not just floating among clouds and occasionally pass another fleeting glimpse of another soul. We're actually in very sophisticated community out there and grow so much in different ways than we grow on Earth, where we come here for such complicated lifetimes. So I want to ask Stephanie about this hierarchy that you know about. What do we need to know about it?
Well, it's a very fascinating subject, Peter. And the Council of Elders came into being around the time of Neanderthal man, by which time, at that time, there were many other species that were in a state of evolution, but Neanderthal man showed the most promise at that time. And so it was the Council of Elders came into being because they realized that if they were going to develop into Homo sapiens, they were going to need a structure of evolution to help them through it, and they were going to need an administrative body and a heavenly system to right. hold it all together. And that is what the Council of Elders is all about.
Right, but also my understanding is that humans have been seeded here from other seeds from other planets, that human form is fairly common in the universe, and yet we were seeded here in a primitive state where we didn't have full use of our DNA nor our brain capacity, which is still very common among us humans. We aren't fully arrived yet at what our potential is. So I would imagine that this Council of Elders had to do with this evolution of primitive man, whether it be Neanderthal or even a more sophisticated version of humanity that might have developed at the same time in different parts of the planet with different races, but that we all had souls. And so the souls were still fairly primitive, at least we came into primitive lives, so we could only evolve in primitive ways at that point. Since then, of course, we have evolved into much more sophisticated awareness. So I appreciate that. Now, the Council of Elders came from where?
They came together at this particular moment in time when a decision was made that they were going to be the chosen ones, shall we say, for future development, for evolution. And at that time, the heavenly system was formed. It wasn't the way it is now. It was very basic at that time, but over the centuries, it's become a highly sophisticated system for evolution. It's based on reincarnation, of course. There are 12 branches of the Council of Elders in the heavens, and there's a central administration branch on the fourth heaven. Just to give you a brief description of the heavenly structure, you have the lords of the world on the first heaven. That's where Jesus, Mohammed, all the great prophets and masters reside, on the first heaven. They're in charge of the spiritual evolution of man. Also on the first heaven, you have the Council of Elders, and the Lords of Karma are on the first heaven. So now the structure is coming together, and everything filters down from the first heaven. Then you have the second heaven, in which you have a particular level are the Ascended Masters. And they, of course, are highly evolved angel beings who are very powerful indeed. On the second heaven, you have my particular guide, John Montgomery, who is an Ascending Master. And Ascending Masters are still working their way up, but they are in a state of perfection. And they have no longer any reason to have earthly lives. So those in the first heaven and second heaven do not incarnate on earth.
Okay, and now we come to the third heaven.
Okay, then you have the heavens below that. And these heavens belong to those who are in the state of evolution. From the sixth heaven up to the third heaven, they are still in process. And the way to get them through the process is by providing each soul with a birth chart. Every soul, when they're reborn, before they're reborn actually, goes into the Department of Planning, and they are then given a choice of birth charts. New souls will have a choice of only two birth charts. They're kept under strict supervision, and they're not given too much leeway.
By that means the choice of two different lifetimes that they could choose.
Yes.
Okay.
Then you have the more advanced souls on the fourth and third heaven. Fourth heaven, they have a choice of about six birth charts. Third heaven, they have, they're moving down the line. They have up to 10 birth charts to choose from because they've had a lot of lives. They can handle a lot of situations. And it's a more challenging experience for them.
Now, I have a question, and that involves the people that we come into life with, family members and people we acquire as close friends and family as we grow into life. A lot of them we've had other lifetimes with. So how are we all getting together and choosing to be in life together when we seem to have so many variables in how we choose our next life?
I think this has a lot to do with the law of karma, both good and bad, because, when we go into the Department of Planning, they ask us, who do you want to be with? Who's important to you? And you might go back five lifetimes and say, I want that person in my life. And if it's agreeable with them, they'll put it into the birth chart so that that person will be with you in one role or another.
So but we might have 10 people or 20 people or 30 people in our families, among our families and friends that we've been through many lifetimes with.
Yes.
For instance, recently I had a revelation that in my last lifetime, my wife in that lifetime who didn't appreciate me became my wife in previous wife in this lifetime who we weren't able to work it out. and got divorced, and that ended the karma of that. So we had chosen to meet up in this lifetime to go through that, and yet that terminated, and then I was able to meet my current wife, who I've been with for 34 years, so that worked out fine, and I'm sure I've had lifetimes with her, so I'm sure that I was choosing, and she was choosing, to be together in this lifetime in ways that manifest our soul's purpose. So those are quite complicated variables to be choosing while we're speaking with the Council of Elders and them helping us choose better.
I don't think it's that complicated. I think that all the main characters are deliberately placed on our path, and the interaction with us is predetermined, and we agree to all this before we come down. So we have a very good idea about the structure of our lives and what they're going to be like before we come here.
Right, including the people who give us trouble. We might have had many lifetimes
Absolutely.
With them as well.
We have bad karma. We all have good and bad karma. And unfortunately, when we get a backlog of bad karma, then certain people will come into our lives to deliver definite messages to us that we need to learn. And that is factored into the birth chart, too.
So it's a very complicated job out there to put the whole scenario together.
Well, I wouldn't like to be working in the Department of Planning, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you have to harness all kinds of karmas from many different
Ooh.
People that have to be worked out.
It's a Hollywood set.
Yeah, exactly. And it's amazing that even there's intelligence out there that's so aware that it can put all of this together.
It's very interesting because the 12 heads of departments all have different functions. And there are thousands of workers, planets, and coordinators, including guardians and guides, who are all working together to pull our lives together for us and to help us through the lives, make sure we get the lessons we're supposed to learn, and help us to overcome the obstacles that are created by bad karma.
Now, I want to ask Darren about this Council of Elders and what he knows about their evolution, too. Why should we even trust these guys?
Actually, from all my sessions with John lately, we've been talking about how the Council of Elders have evolved out of the human condition, which qualifies them to oversee the human condition, whereas previously it was overseen in older times, in very basic times, by overseers from other constellations. So humanity started to oversee itself when it evolved out of the human experience by souls who had developed through compassion and through a depth of substance and developing their soul substance. They then knew the human experience themselves so much that they could start putting order and form to it to help other souls up the same way, taking the same path that they themselves had taken up. They were the trailblazers of developing soul substance.
And I think that has a lot to do with the evolution of consciousness as humans on this planet. As we become more and more conscious, then so have the Council of Elders. So when our lives are over, for instance, let's say we lived 800 years ago in societies that weren't that smart,
yes,
we weren't expected to be as sophisticated as we are today in terms of managing a life and growing the way we expect to grow now.
Actually, the Council of Elders are placing certain elements into humanity intentionally to help evolve us en masse. And one of the elements they placed in the infrastructure was commerce, to help evolve us so we'd stop warring, because it wouldn't be to our benefit. Commerce has helped to civilize humanity.
Commerce.
Yes. Uh-huh. So now commerce is now going against us because of greed. So now we have to take that next step, which is to become more conscious. Then commerce will stop going against us, and we'll be doing it for collaboration, because we want something
right.
better for each other and ourselves, instead of just a greed-based system, which
right.
is what's coming.
That's so obvious now because, for instance, and I'm going to be doing a show very soon on the economy, and it's shown that in the past that commerce and the economy would grow to even create more commerce. and more function. It would be a world where there were a lot of factories and a lot of production, and so the economy had to be productive. Nowadays, because of greed, the economy has lost its productivity, at least the abundance of productivity that used to exist, and now, in a sense, money exists for itself.
And not only that, but those who hold major purse strings of humanity are greed-based and self-based and selfish and ego-based. And we need to start en masse letting go of the ego and starting to be a soul identity instead, so we stop benefiting from grabbing from each other and start aiming toward giving to each other.
Well, I think the frequencies now coming to this planet are allowing us to have greater awareness and understand these factors so much more.
Well, I had a session with John today. He more or less said that technology is superseding our intellects and our own understanding to the point where if we don't include our soul substance, then we're going to either self-destruct or become a very destructive force in the cosmos.
Right, and that's why they're sending us all these higher frequencies so that we start thinking better.
And if we become a very destructive force, maybe the hierarchy might have to clip our wings as human race.
Right, and I think they're trying to help us now rather than diminish us.
Well, I've seen how the hierarchy work a little bit like this. They give us every opportunity to work with ourselves, to learn the soft way, to take their wisdom and advice, to become kind and loving souls. And if we do not listen to that, then the only other option is the hard way.
Right, because the cosmos has to be protected.
So the hard way is they give us our karma.
Well, let's actually see what John Montgomery might want to say in addition to what we're saying.
Yes, let's bring John in on this. Let's see what John will bring about the hierarchy system. Hello, Peter. Hello, Stephanie.
Hi, John. Welcome.
Hello, John.
You're very welcome. So today, let us try to create an impact of understanding that the hierarchy is a benevolent force, a benevolent cosmic force that has come from the human experience. It understands the human experience in totality and is aiming toward progression and evolution of human consciousness and the soul in action. The soul in action means that the soul is using its heart center and its compassion to make its choices, not just the intellect. The intellect by itself is narrow and selfish. The intellect with an ego is blind. The intellect, together with the heart and the soul and being, is benevolent. We must bring out that benevolence and put it into action, no matter what level of progression you're at, into our everyday lives. Whether you are very conscious and spiritual, or whether you are on a very basic state, we must encourage each other and develop our own senses to put that into action.
There must be so much patience out there watching us be so dysfunctional.
The fact is that the soul in action is something to be encouraged and put into worldly action. So not only are we supposed to manage our inner beings, but we're supposed to make our choices from our inner being on a progressive level. For greed to start shifting around to benevolence, there has to become a greater understanding of how we are self-destructing as a human race, and more of an understanding that if we wish to survive, if we truly wish for this world to be something for us all, there has to be a letting go of power and power struggles, and more of a cooperation and a collaboration for humanity's whole sake, not a conflict of countries, a conflict of religions, a conflict of belief systems. There now has to become a collaboration despite all differences.
And the good news is that the timing is right, because now we've come into the Aquarian Age, and the Aquarian Age is based much more on cooperation.
The fact that the Aquarian Age is in play creates a twofold element. One is that we are now developing intellectually. But what is also happening is a lack of development emotionally. We are putting too much focus on the mental body and too little on the emotional body. It does not mean that there are not emotions flowing around, but the maturity of emotions is not there. The emotional body must start becoming a focal point for development in humanity's progression.
And are you saying that it's stymied now because of the Aquarian energy?
The Aquarian age is based on detachment and humanitarianism on a mass scale, but it excludes individual progression. It compartmentalizes to the point that there is no room for true individuality. That is the danger of the Aquarian age. It gives no room because it's boxed everything and labeled everything.
So it's much more community oriented.
Yes.
And that can be good.
It can be a positive if placed in the right way. Whereas detachment will only create more separation than ever before.
Well, tell me how we can overcome that. What are the steps that we need to take to become more emotionally sophisticated?
To become more emotionally sophisticated is to take individual responsibility for ourselves and our own shortcomings. For us to then start looking at ourselves and how much good and substance we have within ourselves as individuals, and starting from there. Instead of focusing on our vulnerabilities, weaknesses and fears, we should actually feel the weight of our own substance and consider that as our starting point. So we hold ourselves up from how much we are, not how little we are.
So if the intellect is being aided, we can use our intellect to understand how to work with our emotions better.
The intellect is a tool, but it is not a means in itself. It's a tool to be harnessed and used and put into action. To understand your feelings is to use the intellect. To feel feelings and just allow them to run rampage is not enough for you to understand why you are feeling vulnerable, why you are feeling insecure, why you are frightened, where that comes from, and what you can do about working with yourself to become fearless, brave, strong, and open. Allow your vulnerability to stay open instead of having you build shields and mechanisms to escape or run away.
And maybe to trust your intellect to help guide you with that open emotion.
The fact is that to have open senses means that you have to understand your senses so that they may open properly.
Right.
So the more senses you get, the more you will be picking up from the universe, which means you should understand what you're picking up instead of just reacting and responding to it.
And can we become much more intuitive in this next age?
By using our whole being, we will flourish. By limiting ourselves, by focusing on one or two of our senses, will keep us small. So we must become expansive and be brave and explorational when we do this.
It feels good. I'm optimistic that we can do that.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thanks for being here, John.
Thank you.
Stephanie.
Yes, Peter.
What's your response to what John had to say?
I think he explained that very well indeed. And the new energies coming in do take a lot of dealing with and do take a lot of understanding. And one big aspect of it is corporate America is really Uranus, Aquarian in nature. And to work in corporate America, you have to be a team player. So individuality becomes lost. And I think this is a very important point, to reclaim your individuality and there's not much room in corporate America for the emotional body. It's all about the mental body. But we have to focus, as John said, on the emotional body and developing that.
And also use the understanding of community, whether it be corporate or otherwise, neighborhoods, that the community can grow larger so corporations can see themselves as part of the larger community of the planet and be responsible for that as well.
I think that's an excellent aspect of it, Pisa, because otherwise it becomes clinical, very cold, and quite ruthless, actually.
Well, let's expect us to become more enlightened and be able to intellectually see our responsibilities planetarily and cosmically, that we need to grow in the right direction.
One of the interesting aspects of the Council of Elders is that when each one of us pass back into the heavens, we're going to have an interview with the members of the Council of Elders, which is usually 5 or 6 members will interview us at the same time. And they're going to ask us very basic questions. They just want to know what we did with that life, how we enjoyed that life, any criticisms we may have about that life. They're there to help us. They're there to assess our progress, how we felt about that life. And so they're going to ask us these basic questions.
So it's not St. Peter meeting us at the gate and telling us whether we have to go to heaven or hell.
No. It's a very casual, easygoing thing. And they just want to know how you felt about that life. And if you have any suggestions for them, because they're learning all the time too. And so they want to know how you felt about that life. Did you enjoy that life? What did you like about it? What did you enjoy about it? If you were a father, did you enjoy being a father? And they're different, just easy questions, but they're interesting questions.
But what if you were a very difficult person in this life and you made your family miserable, you abused your children, you were a crook? I mean, there are a lot of things that we can do in this lifetime that are very self-destructive and destructive to others. What happens when we get out there and talk to this council and they say, well, how did you like your life? And you go, yeah, I enjoyed hitting my kids and I even killed one of them. That was good. How do they respond to that?
Well, they're not there to play judge, jury, and executioners. They are there simply to get some basic information from us about how we felt about that life, how we feel about ourselves at that moment in time. And that's their job. They are not there to do a heavy, heavy, heavy analysis of you.
Then how does it work if we've been atrocious human beings and we get out there and what goes around comes around? Where do we find our meter out there?
That's going to come much later, because you're going to go into Akashic records, you're going to see everything that happened in that lifetime, and you're going to learn a lot, which then leads me to the second interview, which comes around when you decide to be reborn and your soul group decides to be reborn. Because making the decision to be reborn is usually not dependent on one person. It's a group decision. It could stretch across a couple of decades. Some people go down earlier than others, but it's a group decision to go down together. And when the second interview comes up, they talk about the life that you've chosen for yourself. Why did you choose that life? What would you like to achieve? Who do you hope to be with? The nuts and bolts of the situation. So they're feeling you out again, but they're not they're not judging you in any way. They're not criticizing you in any way. They're simply there to get the information.
So then how does our soul know how to grow, and where do we, you know, reap the rewards or the karma, let's say, of a lifetime where we've really been atrocious?
In every birth chart, elements are factored in, and if we behave very badly, then we have bad karma. And that shows up in the birth chart when planets are stationary. When planets are stationary in the birth chart, it will show an R, which is retrograde, and that shows our bad karma, and that tells us the lessons that we need to learn.
I was born in a retrograde.
We're all born into retrograde.
Okay.
You know, it's a common thing. Some poor people have 6 retrogrades.
All right.
I've only got 2, thank heavens.
But let me say this: no matter what someone has done, no matter how low a level they have reached, no matter how destructive or cruel or vicious they've been, they must always at one point in their progression or other, make a return journey back to their heart center and back to their soul being, develop their soul substance, recreate that. So no matter how far someone drops, they must come up because there's nowhere else to go. There is only truly up, ultimately, because down has a bottom and there's nowhere to go beyond returning back up.
So the soul
progression.
I think sometimes the question of 2 steps forward, 1 step back. We can do well and then we start to not do so well. And it's a toing and froing as we try to move forward.
Okay. So let's leave it at this for this show and we'll talk some more. Mm. But it's really important to understand that there is this opportunity for growth, as Darren, as you said, when we're scraping the bottom of the barrel of atrocity, there's only up to go, and that's nice to hear.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And
thank you so much, Peter. You're a wonderful host.
Thank you. And Darren Knight, also, thank you so much.
Wonderful.
And how can people reach you guys?
You can reach me on trinitysouls.net.
Trinitysouls.net. And Stephanie S. Darrell, D-A-R-R-E-L-L. How can people reach you?
On the website, Seven Glorious Days in Heaven.
Okay. Thank you so much, both of you. It's been great talking with you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I can be reached at Heart River, H-E-A-R-T, river.org, or 212-222-7748. I'm teaching lots of classes nowadays, and I'd love to hear from you. So please give me a call or email me, and thank you so much for listening.